Hello, I'm Mariet Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is highly educated career women. Why finding a partner may be difficult. My guest is Dr. Sandy To, sociologist and author from Hong Kong. Welcome, Sandy.
Hello. Hi, Mariette. So great to hear from you.
And I'm pleased to be talking to you today. To our listeners, after our conversation, Sandy will give us her three little hacks for life, and then it will be fun question time. Sandy, could you tell us a little about yourself and your career?
Okay. Well, I did my PhD at Cambridge University in the UK, and it was on gender. So I wanted to choose a topic related to gender. And I just thought, like, there wasn't a lot of literature, a lot of research done about women's courtship, you know, this area. So there's a lot done on, you know, gender roles in the workplace, gender roles in marriage. But what about for single women, right? So What about highly educated women? Because in countries all over the world, there is like a later age of first marriage. I wouldn't say like a non, you know, like people not getting married, but like they're getting married like later in life. And so why not, you know, like move towards that direction and try to figure out the reasons why. So my research coincided with the phenomenon called the leftover women phenomenon, the Shengnu phenomenon in China. So it's when there's like women who are 27 or above who aren't married but have high education level and high professional status. And they're facing pressure from society in, you know, all walks of life and from parents or from everywhere questioning their choices. So, you know, I went off to China's biggest cosmopolitan city. It's Shanghai, where a lot of women from different cities congregate to work in multinational companies. And so they're like professionals and everything. So I went there to do like research for several years back and forth to figure out, you know, to do some field work, to interview these women about their choices. So that's how my research on leftover women, you know, was derived.
Yes. And then you wrote the book called China's Leftover Women, Late Marriage Among Professional Women and Its Consequences. Could you start by just telling us how the whole theme of China's leftover women relates to highly educated career women the world over? Would there be certain traits that these two groups share?
Yes. As I was doing research, you know, I just thought that like the leftover women in China really is undergoing the same situation as women from all over the world who are high-powered career women. Like they also equally face the same problem. It's not because they choose to get married later or don't have they choose not to get married because they're too invested in their career. It's because, you know, after interviewing them that I found they actually have difficulties finding partners because they're too accomplished in the eyes of men. And, you know, besides women in China, I think women all over the world have this problem because women are getting more and more highly educated and becoming, you know, climbing the corporate ladder. And they're having this exact, you know, very similar difficulties as these Chinese women.
That is why it's so interesting. Would you say that traditional marriage has lost its appeal among the new generations of economically independent women?
No, definitely not. Because for the women that I interviewed, I would say that the majority, a very high majority, actually still want to get married very much. Like they're still aspiring to this goal, except they just cannot realize it because they have some like gendered constraints, which is, you know, men not being interested in them. So I would say that they are very much interested in this traditional institution, regardless of whether like they're like so educated and so some of them are just very westernized. They actually went abroad for a majority of their life, and they're very sort of open-minded. They're very individualized, westernized, but still like they still yearn to have that sort of to settle down and to have a family.
Would you like to mention more of the gender constraints in partner choice that these women face?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one type is the women are discriminated against by men for their high achievements because like the men, they have male superior norms and they're intimidated by very high achieving women because they're afraid that, well, their masculinity, you know, would be usurped. And they don't want to marry someone like that, right? So because they would be afraid that their household role would become compromised if they marry someone like that, like that's really successful. Well, the other gendered constraint is for women who actually have boyfriends already. So I've interviewed two different types of women. Like one type is the women who are like single, as in they don't have partners at all. And another type is women who actually have boyfriends, but they were either broken up with by their boyfriends, or they cannot stand their boyfriend's control and they had to call it quits, you know, even if they know that they're sacrificing their chance of marriage, because these guys are like controlling their lifestyle choices, you know, asking them, so why are you buying this? Why are you buying that? Or giving them ultimatums to quit their careers, to quit their jobs for marriage. It's like either you choose to have kids, we get married, have kids, and you quit your job, or like we're done. So they're facing these types of gendered constraints.
Now, Sandy, you've identified four types of women who perform four different partner choice strategies. Could you tell us more about this?
Yes. So one type of women, they're called the maximizers, and they are the ones who are they're very, you know, traditional. Like they definitely want to get married. That's like their ultimate goal. So they're willing to do a lot to reach their goal. They're willing to do a lot, have very creative strategies to find a partner, such as dating outside their culture. Like if a Chinese man don't work, then maybe I might try a French man or an English man or an American man or a German man, right? So maybe like they would think dating outside their culture would sort of, you know, dampen their economic differences and, you know, sort of distract from the economic differences, right? So that is one very interesting strategy. And some of them have succeeded in finding a boyfriend who doesn't discriminate against them, right? And another type, besides having this strategy, the maximizers would also try dating men who are maybe older, or they've been divorced before, but they have strong economic achievements as well, like maybe very well-off men or something, but they might be older, or they might have more complicated relationship status, but they're willing to put up with that because first of all, they want to get married, want to realize their marriage goals, and they also have high economic criteria. They have high economic expectations for the men as well. So they're willing to put up with other things, right? And some would actually conceal their own achievements from their suitors, like not telling them they have a PhD maybe, or I know they would find out later, but this is a good strategy because, you know, it gives the men a chance to know the real them, you know, the real them that is not concealed by their glowing exterior, right? Their glowing credentials. Mm-hmm. So I think that these are like the maximizers. They have very creative partner choice strategies. Yeah. So another type would be the opposite of them, who are the satisficers. So satisfies is like a theory of choice. So basically, you choose something, you're not looking for the best choice, but you're looking for something that fulfills your basic requirements, which is to get married, and that would suffice, mm-hmm. right? So you're not looking for very like high status men or men who are very have strong economic criteria, but you're looking maybe the opposite way. You're looking for men who maybe they're overlooked in the marriage market, so they might want to find men who are less accomplished. As long as those men are egalitarian and they the men themselves don't mind, they're okay with that too. As long as those men are willing to get married with them, so that's like the opposite of the maximizers, right? So the satisfizers. So the third type is called an innovator, and they're the most egalitarian in their outlook, and they do want to get married too, but they're not as traditional as the other types. Like they're not against marriage, but they won't get married to someone who they have doubts with, or they're not willing to put up with so much just to get married. So they don't mind if they really can't find someone. They'd rather look toward lifestyles with like female friendships, or even there's one who even told me she's looking into old person's homes for the future, because she said that all the men, like they're like not within her expectations, like no one is suitable for her, so she's given up basically, and she's looking for old people's homes, and she'd rather that than put up with someone she's not that interested in, or doesn't give her the level of egalitarianism that she wants. Yeah, and even like some innovators, they're willing even to try to have a child on their own. They're not willing to give up the chance of having a family, even if they can't find someone. So they think that, well, solo, parenthood is fine too, because I have the resources. I'm like a high-powered career woman. I have the resources. I have the money to take care of a family on my own, so I don't need a man in that regard. But the thing is, like, they're not against marriage, except that they're more into egalitarianism.
And your fourth group?
Mm-hmm. So, well, the fourth type, yeah, the fourth group is like a traditionalist who's like very traditional in that they want marriage and they want a man who's a main breadwinner. So they're very, very much like the maximizers, except they don't have as creative partner strategies. They would go matchmaking. Like, I think their biggest strategy is to ask people to introduce a lot of men to them to increase their chances. So they aren't not doing anything, but they're not being as resourceful as the maximizers.
This is fascinating. And Sandy, did you find any other traits that these educated career women would be looking for in partners?
You mean in terms of their traits for men?
Yes. Or? What sort of partners would interest them, or would that be too varied to generalize?
Yeah, because the four different types, they also have different expectations when it comes to their partner. For instance, like the traditionalists and the maximizers, they are looking for a partner who's a main breadwinner type. So they're not willing to compromise their economic goals. So they want marriage and they want a breadwinner. Mm-hmm. So, but the other two types, like the satisficers and the innovators, they are looking for, well, their marriage is also their goal as well, except they're willing to look for partners who are less like strong in terms of their earning power. Like, they're willing to find men who are secondary earners, and they don't mind taking up the chief earner role as long as they can find someone who's willing to get married to them. And the innovators satisfizers and innovators, they have higher expectations for egalitarianism rather than economics, I would say.
And Sandy, I know that you are working on a self-help book which will be based on this research you've done. Could you tell us more about the book?
Yes, I'm sure. So I'm working on it, and I've decided to adapt the theories that I talked to just now in China's Leftover Women in my previous book into a more, a more commercial self-help book that can help more high-powered career women from all over the world to find partners. Because my previous book was more academic, and it was like meant for the academic market, and it's not accessible. So I finally decided to turn that into something that can really help everyday women.
I've never come across any book like that.
That's perfect. Like, that's exactly what I want to do. Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, I was thinking the same too, because I'm a self-help junkie and I read a lot of relationship self-help books growing up, and I've never encountered something so specific as that as well, right? So I'm thinking this is great. Like, I really need to do
You
this.
do. Where can listeners learn more about your work if they are interested?
Yeah, you can go to my website, sandytoe.com, and there is a more detailed description of my book, China's Leftover Women, the one published by Routledge. And you can actually know where to buy that as well if you're interested. You can actually get a copy of that in all major websites like Amazon or Waterstones, Barnes and Noble, Routledge website itself. So it is actually in the market. It's viable. It's just like not as mass marketly accessible as a book that I would publish with a commercial publisher. But still, a lot of people have come to me in my social media and my ResearchGate, like my research website, to ask me about acquiring this book. And I just said, well, maybe if you can't find it like in a local bookstore, you can go to the library, because it's stocked worldwide in basically all university libraries or public libraries as well, like worldwide. So it is actually accessible in that regard. So before you get my new book, probably you could get a copy of my academic book as well, because it is actually written. I've written it in a very accessible style. It's not like completely like academic or theoretical. There's a bit of both in there. So I think that it would suit a lot of people's taste too. And also, you can follow me on social media. I will be giving a lot of updates. And there's also my blog, in which I will regularly update like the goings on with my appearances and also the book's progress, my new book progress as well. It's also on my website.
Right, I'll get all that information from you and put it into the podcast notes. A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.mariehetsneyman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. Now, back to my guest. And I think it's time for your three little hacks for life.
Right. Okay. So these are my tips. The first one is about cooking. If you use garlic powder or you use garlic salt, anything that's like garlic related, it's very sticky. And so you should put it into the fridge, into the refrigerator, so that it doesn't clump when you use it. Because I've tried so many times when I've taken out a bottle of garlic salt or garlic powder, and I've tried using it, and you know, after like the humid months, it becomes very sticky. I don't know the humidity in your area, but in my area, it's quite humid. It can get quite humid in the summer. So after that, when I try using it, it's like clumped together, and it's like a waste because I can never get it out. So in order to not waste it, in order to become very like usable, so please put it into the fridge. So that's like the first one is about cooking. The second one is about cleaning. Okay, so I never leave my house without a detergent pen. So I think you can get those at like any supermarket. So it's like a pen, but it's like a detergent, which you can use, especially if you have kids and they go out and they you know, they spill chocolate sauce on their clothes, or they spill some like soup stains or oil stains or juice or whatever. It's so convenient that you just blot it out with the pen, and then it makes like it may fade or it may completely be erased like right then and there, before you do the laundry. So I think it's easier to remove the stain if you do it like on the spot rather than wait for your next laundry, right? So I use it all the time with my son and myself as well, because like we spill stuff too. So it's good for both kids and adults. Okay, so the third one is related to packing when you're traveling. So I would highly recommend bringing a few plastic bags to put into your luggage, because you would have some dirty clothes, and you want to separate those with the clothes you haven't worn or the clothes you just bought or something. So you would want to put your dirty clothes into the plastic bags to separate them. And after you come home, you can still reuse those bags. Just air them if they're not too dirty. Just air them and then label them it's for dirty clothes and use them again in your next trip.
Thank you, Sandy. These are so practical. I'm going to use them.
Thanks. I hope they can be of use.
And may I ask you a fun question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, in Johannesburg where I live, we mostly have blue skies. I know it's nighttime now in Hong Kong while we are recording, right?
Yes.
But here's your question. If you could change the habitual color of the sky from blue to something completely different for one day, which color would you choose and why?
I would think that maybe like a pastel pinkish hue would be quite nice. Well, first of all, because I love pink, you know, so that's quite cool. And it gives like a sort of cotton candy vibe. And I would think that, you know, gives off like this fairy tale sort of vibe. And it might be fun for a change, for something being not blue or gray or something that we can fantasize about. You know, life is all about these little, you know, like fantasies and having fun.
Thank you, Sandy. I specifically like the fairy tale vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thank you for sharing with us some of your research. I think it's going to touch a nerve with many women all over the world who are economically independent and struggling to find the right partner. So thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. It was like my pleasure.
And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series where you download your podcasts. And if you found this episode interesting, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes, and for free articles and podcast episodes on how to live a happier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, just search for Mariette Snyman, Journalist. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.